Joining us today is Dr. Michael Luttrell, a College of Education professor. Welcome. Good to have you.
Thank you. Thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah. So we'll chat a little bit. I know that you've had a lot of different experiences, which I found fun when I kind of did my background research that you've been in a lot of different areas. So I got a lot of different questions for you.
Yeah, great.
But we can start with you. If you just introduce yourself, where you're from, kind of how you got to where you're sitting in the chair today.
Sure. So I'm a local Cookevillian, I guess is how I'd characterize myself. Grew up in the area. I was kind of from a blue collar family, and went to Jerry Whitson and All Good. Kind of had that experience. Went through the entire Putnam County education system, and then found myself at Tennessee Tech for my undergrad. Was interested in a lot of different areas. Wound up focusing on education, particularly visual art education. So I'm K-12 certified in that. And then I worked in teaching in the classroom for a number of years. Found that I was interested to kind of go back to school and further my education. Got a master's degree in curriculum and instruction with an emphasis in curriculum. And then wound up getting a PhD in exceptional learning. And then my emphasis there is program planning and evaluation. So that's kind of the on paper. And then the context, I guess, to all of that is just I've been kind of a lifelong learner. My father, he went back to school. He kind of went back to school and got his first degree whenever he was in the 80s. He got a computer and I kind of got to experience that from a very young age, being very technology driven and working to say, hey, this is going to be shaping the world in the future. What do we do with these boxes and how are they going to impact us? So.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And one of my follow up questions that made me think of that is your family. Do you have family that are educators, teachers in the family?
Yeah, I've got an aunt. She was a long term educator in Baxter, so she was definitely an influence there. I've got some extended family and friends of family that were educators. My wife, who I've been with for a number of years, that was also an influence. She's got a lot of educators in her family, and they really influenced my decision. I've been with her for since I was coming out of high school and into college. We got married. They really had an influence, persuaded me, I think, to kind of go down that path. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm always trying to figure out how I can pull people into education. Uh-huh. I don't know if it's a part psychology, part social experiment, but I'm always looking for those keys or those moments or those things that got people excited. And many times part of it starts with a family member.
Yeah.
And people sometimes wander mm-hmm. around before they land in education, but very often the educators that I talk to have a family member of some sort that has that influence.
Yeah. And, I think it was family members. It was, like I said, I went through the Putnam County education system. I was influenced by a lot of really great teachers. My experience at Cookeville High School was incredible. Just all the humanities and the arts and the sciences and the math and all that really touched me in terms of like, oh, okay, so I see what they're doing here. They're kind of preparing us to become functional adults out in the real world, and that's a pretty cool thing. That really kind of resonated with me. And then whenever I got to the end of, having been in the schools, learning since, 18 years, it's like, well, I've got all this expertise built up, so might as well make use of that. And so that's kind of the path I chose.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to hear you mention your dad, because I wondered where the technology came to play. Because a lot of times I see people who have the fine arts side or the technology side. Mm-hmm. It's not as often that you talk to someone who's experienced had both of those experiences.
Yeah.
And I imagine it crosses paths too.
Yeah, I was fortunate to kind of have a balanced education in that way, I feel like. You know, I was always exploring things creatively and just whatever kind of piqued my curiosity. But then I had a father who was very driven by technology and just really how, you know, how that was shaping the world and things. And so we kind of learned together, and I got to go out to different job sites. He worked at Tennessee Tech for a number of years there. I stood on ladders and helped him run Ethernet cable through some of those buildings there, things like that. So spent a lot of long evenings in Clement Hall as a child working with the VAC system and things. So really got to see kind of both sides of things, and I think a lot of there were some family members who were surprised that I wasn't going into a technology field or something. But yeah, at the time I was very focused on art and educating. So that's kind of, yeah, they just kind of crossed paths in that way. And I've never felt like having both was a detriment at all. Like, they always just kind of worked in favor. If I was engaged in a tech project, then having that artistic background, where technology is so visual, it really made a huge difference for me to be able to understand things like user interface or graphic design and stuff. And so,
And backing up to your high school days, middle school, high school days, I know that Putnam County has always been very forward with their technology. Growing up in a smaller rural school system, we didn't even have a computer lab. We had the Apples, the Apple computers from a grant or whatever in elementary, but we didn't have a computer lab until I was a junior in high school. And that was installed in the high school at that point, the computer lab. And I don't even know if we had any teachers at that point who were even really qualified to teach anything besides, turn it on and practice your typing, keyboarding or whatever. And so I know that having the larger school, there are some perks for coming through a larger school system, just in terms of the amount of things that you have available to learn from, from the arts to the technology. What did that look like when you were coming through? Were there lots of things available?
Yeah, there were a lot of things available. There were some really innovative ideas. I mean, I remember whenever we first started at the high school, and I was the first class to go through the new Cookeville High School. So in 1996 is when I started high school. And so we had, for example, we had a driver's ed like simulator installed in the building there for a number of years. And so that was how I got to experiencing what it was like to drive, the first time was in that simulator.
Sounds entertaining.
Yeah. I don't think they have it today. This is one of those things that we're going to explore this and see where it goes. I think in that school system at the time there was still probably the ever-present question, like how do we serve these kids with technology? Like, we know it's important, but in what way, and what's that going to look like? I remember specifically there were some friends that I made who had like a computer. They were involved in a computer club, and so that was really informative early high school. And then there were we had good access to technology, like in the libraries and things. So that was really really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So then, so backing up a little bit, one of the questions I love to ask is, and since you're a Putnam County student, it's most likely going to be a Putnam County teacher. Mm-hmm. What was the teacher, or who was the teacher that had the most influence on you through your K-12 career?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go kindergarten on this one. So okay. Miss Hannah, if you're out there, she was a great lady and just really started it all off. It was, I think, once you get that first understanding of how this is going to go, and someone's helping you into that, that's really foundational. And she was just a very caring person, and always knew how to make you feel welcome and like you were important. And I think that really stuck with me, and probably resonates with me in teaching doctoral level students. There's probably some of that still going on. So
that's very similar. I've talked to several, I've had kindergarten teachers on the show, and it's amazing to me the level of thought that has to go into teaching kindergarten. I think a lot of times the elementary programs can be overlooked or undervalued in the level of difficulty and importance that are in those elementary grade levels. And the kindergarten teachers, they're literally teaching the kids how to be students. Yeah. I mean, they have to teach them how to line up. I mean, there are all these things that you kind of take for granted. And when you come in into the school system, you have to learn all those things, you know, and so many different students coming in, you know, the kids that have had that have been in preschool, and then the kids that have never walked into a school, you know, for all 5 years, and now they're kindergartners, and you have to literally start from scratch. And so it's impressive what they do.
Yeah, yeah, certainly. It really sets the tone for the entire rest of the experience. Mm-hmm. And you know, when I was in the public education system, I had a range of kids. So I was primarily the teacher of record, I guess, for pre-K through 8. So I taught in a very rural place over in DeKalb County. And that was incredible, you know, getting that experience. And we didn't have like a lot of resources per se, but we were, I think, quite innovative and you know, had some really great educational outcomes out there. So definitely got to see, you know, what's that like teaching the young ones, and how it's gonna you know, set the tone. So,
yeah, and so you got to teach across those grade levels, and that was teaching art.
Yeah,
correct.
Uh-huh, right.
Which
right.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
I mean, it was.
Of all the things that you know that you could teach, and I don't have the artistic skill set personally, but I've always thought it would be a lot of fun.
Yeah,
to teach. I'm sure there's some herding cats, kind of like trying to control things, and some chaos, but I'm sure it was rewarding.
Very, yeah. You know, just kind of living up there on the lake in Smithville and teaching art and, you know, being, you know, just involved in the community and doing a lot of hiking and kayaking and things was a really ideal experience for me. So, yeah, enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll come back and fast forward into your next career.
Sounds good.
Welcome back. Talking to Dr. Michael Luttrell from the College of Education and Human Sciences. Make sure that we get the full name correct there.
Yeah.
With the change from College of Ed to College of Ed and Human Sciences. So we were talking before the break about your time in the school system, and so you were in a pre-K 8 fine arts position, mm-hmm, officially, mm-hmm, in DeKalb County. So at some point, you decided to make a jump out of the classroom and into a few different other fields that have led you to where you are today. What was it that kind of pulled you in a different direction initially?
Yeah, I think I was kind of feeling compelled to use a technology skill set that I had been, you know, just kind of working on in the background for a lot of years, and it was always interesting to me. You know, I started I guess one of the foundational ideas when I was teaching art was just trying to relate that, like not only let them explore their creative impulses, but relate that to real world understandings and career ideas and this type of thing. So it always kind of kept that in the back of my mind that I would like to pursue that. And came to a point where, you know, I was given an opportunity to step out of the classroom. Went into the corporate environment for a couple of years and really kind of refocus my data skills, my computer skills, networking things, and I was able to be successful there. But I missed education, right? So I was like, you know, I really want to kind of reengage with that. So that's kind of the point where I reached out to tech and started talking about what the options were and what they look like, and yeah, I was just really really drawn to, you know, the different programs that were there, and was excited to really kind of you know, learn what exceptional learning and program planning evaluation, what that's all about. So.
Yeah, and that's a mouthful.
It is,
and so for the listeners, I'm obviously an insider, and I know about what that is, but just for someone off the street, first of all, you know, how would you explain exceptional learning as a PhD and where it's housed, but then program planning and evaluation, what is that? What does it look like?
Yeah. So exceptional learning is really, in my mind, you're trying to reach students who are most at risk of some type of a negative outcome. So it's folks who really need extra supports, really need people to connect with them in ways that are not necessarily traditional. So this can be, folks who are disabled, for example, or it could be folks who are very high achieving, you know, the gifted type of student. And then program planning and evaluation, it's about using your traditional research methods, right? So we're talking about using math and numbers or qualitatively like interviews or asking questions, these types of things, to figure out if a program is working. And usually it's characterized like a social program or something where you maybe have an intervention to help kids or help community members or such. And you are trying to engage with that and just figure out, hey, is this really having an impact? Is it doing what we would hope? And that's kind of where it's really was. I started engaging with it at, and then I learned, you know, through that process that not only is it for those types of programs, but the skill set is very applicable to understanding software programs, applications. And so that's kind of where I picked up with it and was able to transition also into sort of that broad field of software. So.
And I think it seems to me with those programs that you almost have to understand big picture, you know, a goal of something that's being implemented. Something that comes to mind, I've talked to several people from the Gear Up grants.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Gear Up grants are really big. They're designed to ultimately to help students in high school go into post-secondary of some sort, TCAT, college, some kind of post-secondary. And so, you know, on the day-to-day basis, you need that data, but then you need someone who can also back out and look over that big span of years, 5 years, 6 years, and say definitively, this program was successful or it was not. And in my mind, program planning and evaluation, it's like a perfect scenario in the K-12 world to talk through and be the person, yes, I can figure that out. You know, I can help you devise a plan so that we can understand if that program is successful or not, which, you know, it never really quite comes down to a yes or no. You can have a yes or no, but it's always a little more gray than that.
Right. Right. Yeah. It is all about, taking a look at what's there, trying to back it up with numbers and data. You've got stakeholders, folks who are really interested in knowing, like, are their grant dollars being well spent? Is this meeting certain needs that we hoped it would? And yeah, I was just after I graduated from the PhD program, I really was just amazed at how well that skill set, you know, lined up with working in educational technology and things. So that's been kind of, yeah, really a good experience for me, I think. So
then you made the jump from there. So you finished your PhD program, mm-hmm. and then you made the jump into, you kept the educational side, but you integrated the technology side. So talk a little bit about where you were in some of your next positions.
Yeah. So it was, I graduated back in the pandemic time. So I was
very memorable.
Right. Yeah. I wasn't certain where to go or what I would be doing. I reached out to a couple of educational software companies. I was really fortunate meeting some folks out in Idaho. They had a longstanding like paper curriculum, teaching just social and emotional skills to students in a K-12 classroom. And I applied for just completely something unrelated. But the owner of the company, he reaches out. He calls me one day and he's like, you know, I've been thinking about your resume all week. And he's like, you could do this other thing, but I'd really like to create this position for you. And it's called product management. And I'm like, oh, well, this sounds fascinating. You know, at that moment, I'd never heard of it. And
what does that mean?
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I really dug in and was like, okay, I'm going to be the absolute best product management person I can be. And that's what I started doing, you know, just really overseeing the production of their transition from paper-based curriculum products to software. And so that's kind of where I got my start working there for a couple of years. And then, I found another opportunity where I had the chance to move up to senior product manager and start overseeing kind of just the development teams and the graphic design teams and the user experience teams and stuff, and kind of putting all that together. And again, I had to rely on my data and my my evaluation and program planning skills to really make that happen. So,
And with that transition, you know, it's interesting. So many things changed in COVID in just so many different ways. But that jump from paper to technology, it just created jobs. Yeah. I mean, essentially, it created jobs.
It did, yeah. And it was a time, you know, I think we were all kind of like, there were some folks that I worked with who had that experience of working all online and remotely. But for many of us, it was the first time, you know, making that transition. And it did a whole lot of, you know, it led to a whole lot of business for us because school systems were reaching out or had a lot of, you know, RFPs, requests for proposals out there. Like, hey, we're trying to navigate this. What do you got for us? What can you make for us? So that was really, really a foundational part of making that change and opened a lot of doors for me. So
yeah, jumped in feet first.
Yeah.
It sounds like. All right. Well, let's take a short break and okay. We'll come back and talk about what you're into now and maybe look forward a little bit.
Sounds good.
Welcome back. Talking to Dr. Michael Luttrell, the College of Education and Human Sciences at Tennessee Tech. So you're working. So the COVID, which always, there's always something else we learn about COVID. COVID created jobs. COVID took away jobs. The time was, it was so unstable. Interestingly enough, we were just looking at some enrollment data and we had some majors, undergrad and graduate, that spiked during COVID and then they've just trailed back off. And so, you know, I'm trying to understand, well, what drove the people to those specific majors? Everything was kind of upside down during COVID. So with that part, so now talk a little bit more about your current role. I know it's still kind of new, but mm-hmm. but a little bit about what you're doing now and the program itself and where you see that going and how you see that influence.
Yeah, so I'm currently assistant professor teaching data science courses in the higher education PhD program. So essentially, you know, my experience so far has been just that we have a wide range of experiences of folks who have different, I guess, I refer to it as a data identity, right? So we're saying folks who are who have used data very little, right? They haven't had to engage with it, but maybe they've like managed folks who have, or they're folks who have worked with it a lot. And what that can look like is traditional research, you know, where you're trying to use data to investigate and what's called make inference, right? You're trying to understand it, trying to explain it. You're trying to write, you know, get publications, articles written essentially. And then there's folks who have had to actually use data to kind of back up their you know, their understandings of the happenings in their different departments, or if they're working on grants or this type of thing. So it's a wide range of experiences that I'm approached with and a lot of different understandings. And I'm getting kind of questions like, hey, we use data in this way, but you're saying it can also be used in that way. So I'm sort of at the middle of all of that, trying to explain to, you know, there's a lot of different ways that data science can happen. So.
And it's fun seeing that variety because it touches everything. I mean, everyone from the radio station to politics to the government to higher ed to hospitals, so much of it. I mean, there's data everywhere, and the question is, you know, do you have the capabilities to figure out ways to use it? I mean, you know, even with the radio station, they want to reach more listeners. And so, you know, there's information to help figure out where those markets are and if the ads work. And I mean, there's so many ways to analyze. It's fun that we've plugged it into the higher education PhD program. Mm-hmm. And so as it continues, first of all, explain a little bit about it being online, mm-hmm. Because that's still, after COVID, has evolved. We've had online programs for years, but the demand has increased since COVID to have those graduate programs that are completely online. What does that look like for you?
Yeah, for me, there's a lot of kind of different facets, a lot of sides there at play, I think. One of them is just there's the convenience factor, right? So folks can engage with the course asynchronously. They can sit down anytime and they can complete lessons. what I have strived to do is make it completely, you know, you can work through the entire course in that way. If you prefer to remain completely working at your own pace, you can. And then also, you know, offer, you know, just we'll have synchronous sessions each week. So if you want to check in and talk about the content, you can do that. I've also just made myself really highly available to folks. So, you know, if they can't engage with the content till Sunday evening, that's fine. Reach out. We'll talk through it. You know, we'll work on it and make sure that you're successful. So it's just all about supporting folks where they are and how they choose to learn. So I'm just, I think that it's, you know, that's one of the key parts of all of this is that, you know, you've got people working, they're working online, they're having to figure out what that looks like for them. And then there's the notion of, you know, your data science is done on the computer anyway, you're using these coding tools and things that we teach in the course. So that's just a really convenient kind of all-in-one place for that to happen. So,
yeah. And it's, to me, I feel like during COVID, we almost had an overreaction of having to move things online.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of it bounced back, you know, especially like with our undergrads, we had some of that move online, but then we've really pulled back and tried to have more in person in the undergrad world as much as possible. But really in the graduate world, it almost felt like it just pushed it all. And there are very few graduate programs in person anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's benefits, but also, you know, there's the human connection, you know, and it's something I feel like we're still striving to balance in higher ed and in business and things is just how do we make that, you know, really good kind of cohesive team and courses and class environments while at the same time kind of embracing the convenience of online. So, yeah, still trying to figure that out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how does AI come into what you teach and how do you see AI evolving with what you teach into because it evolves every day. I mean, it's amazing to me every single day something new comes out with AI where it's touching somewhere else in our lives.
Yeah, yeah. I think it goes kind of back to a story where my first understanding of AI, generative AI, like your large language models, like your ChatGPT, I think would be one that most folks are familiar with. You know, I had this daily stand-up meeting with a team of engineers. I'm talking to them. There's a guy in the room. He's our software architect. Like he's our most knowledgeable engineer, and he's talking to one of the senior developers. And the question gets posed to him something about how the software is architected, and they converse for a while. It's really intense, and then it's like, yeah, that's good. ChatGPT said the same thing. Except it also said I would do this, this, and this. And you know, I was just stunned. I'd never heard of that at all. And so that really started my understanding of, hey, these developers that are out here who have years and years of experience with this, they're engaging with AI every day. Their questions might be quite advanced, but to code with, you are using AI a ton, you know, not in a way that is unstructured or you're not leaving it up to AI, but you're certainly using it as an essential part of your workflow. So what that's done really in the data science courses is how do I segment those out a little bit where I want to teach the right way and the foundational skills to do things, the expertise that you have to have to be able to engage with AI. So honestly, I've left it up kind of, you know, I've taught those foundational skills. But then, you know, humans will do, they'll be like, hey, I don't know something. So I'm going to look to the internet. I'm going to look to AI, look this up. And they'll start kind of coming up with their own solutions. And it's been really fascinating to watch, you know, instead of getting stuck like you would have, you know, early 2020s, pre-AI times, I don't know how to do this coding exercise. So I'm going to have to ask somebody. But now you have a means to unstick yourself and have it explained to you, like what's going on. It's quickly changing coding. It's quickly changing the ways to do data science. I look back, like when I was trying to find textbooks, at things that in the early, like 2021, 2022, those are outdated and almost embarrassing to even work with, and they're not that old. So it's very interesting to see how much is changing. And I also have to keep, you know, regular kind of regularly informing myself, like what's coming out this month, because it's changing. You know, like I saw, I think it was OpenAI released their Excel update that's able to work with Excel data in a way that it hadn't been previously. And I'm like, oh, well, that's new. That's going to change considerably the way that mm-hmm. folks are going to be able to engage with data in Excel. So it's rapidly changing, and just always having to stay on top of it. Mm-hmm.
And I think there are so many ways that it can help with efficiency. You know, some people are scared of it. I mean, you know, it's human nature to be afraid of the unknown part, but in so many ways, I think it really will impact us. Will be our day to day lives where we use those technologies, and it just enhances or makes things more efficient. So, just using Excel, for example, years ago, I spent a whole lot of time figuring out how to take a little data set and make it into a chart. And now, right in Excel, you know, there's AI built in, and you just say, "Hey, I need this in a pie chart." Yeah. I mean, and boom. It's already there and it's done. And so, you know, once you understand, again, you mentioned the foundational skills, once you understand the foundational part of something, using AI to be more efficient, I think is a great use of AI.
Yeah. Yeah. To become more efficient. And then also, say for example, if you're a person who has not spent much time coding or if you've just kind of shied away from those more technical aspects of professional skills, re-engaging with that through the lens of AI just boosts your learning considerably, like where you can get to more quickly and really become expert in much less time than you could have, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago. So it's in terms of just learning more technical skills and becoming proficient, I think, you know, the good part is, yes, it does boost you and does make you able to gain mastery in that way quicker. But also it's going to probably elevate the floor of, you know, professional skill set of where a lot of us will be expected to work at with these technical skills and different systems and things.
So, mm-hmm. It certainly has come a long way from having to reference a textbook.
Yeah.
To, you know, to try to learn something. I mean, and learning in all aspects of our lives, really.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Very true. And like some of my students starting out in this semester, they would would request that they send me certain assignments, and they would take pictures of their handwritten assignment mm-hmm. in a notebook or something, and then. That's where, you know, now I think that we're several months in, they've transitioned, like they figured out, oh, actually it's much more efficient to work with AI or something and turning things in digitally. So it's kind of reshapes, you know, as much as I love physical books and notebooks and stuff like that and really feel compelled to use those. But when I'm professionally working, you know, I have to rely on the efficient way of doing things.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, we've reached the end of our time. I think we could talk another hour very easily. So I appreciate you coming down and chatting with us.
Absolutely. It's great to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
Uh-huh. Thank you.